Hello to listeners both new and long-term. Quick note, Elise and I have finally launched our Patreon podcast. It's called We Couldn't Help But Wonder, Still Wondering. You can find it on the Patreon website and find an easy link through our website, wecouldn'thelpbutwonder.com. To those who have already subscribed, our deepest thanks, and to those who haven't yet, come check us out. For only $4 a month, we'll be breaking down a new romantic comedy set in New York City in 3 to 4 episodes, with the same humor and detail we've brought to over 100 episodes of this podcast. When Harry Met Sally is already up, we're almost done with You've Got Mail, and up next, Hitch. We're really excited to share this new series with you. All right, here's the show. Hey, Elise Castle.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
I was going to ask how it's going today, but I know you're having kind of a rough day.
Should
we just move right into the episode?
I'm just having one of those days where I have to get a lot of stuff done, and I'm trying to get a lot of stuff done, and everyone is irritating me. And then today I held the door open for like these young teens, and then they were like, "You're so rude, ma'am." And I look back and they have like a video camera in my face, and I felt like Carrie and Charlotte at the store where Carrie's like, "Charlotte, you're gonna turn into a meme." So that's how I felt today.
Well, we'll get right into the episode. Today we're here to talk about Bomb Cyclone. This episode originally aired July 20th, 2023, directed by Cynthia Nixon. And we have another fun written by. It's written by Michael Patrick King, who we all know, obviously, ampersand Rachel Palmer. And this harkens back to, I can't think if it was the very last episode, but this is another example of a writer who started out as a writer's assistant on Two Broke Girls and kind of wrote their way into, I think they actually did write an episode or two. And then when this season event Just Like That was coming along, Michael Patrick King reached out to Rachel to say, "Hey, do you want to write an episode with me?" So once again, Michael Patrick King, champion of the burgeoning writer, helping people get a foothold in the industry. I look up to him greatly for doing that. So I think that's awesome.
Michael Patrick King, my name is Elise Castle, and this is my friend Mike Jensen. And we don't want to wait tables anymore. And we're both really good writers. And that's all we wanted to say to you.
I wonder if I could make it. We're going to get into the episode really quickly. But I do look at like the young people as writer's assistants. And I'm like, I wonder if I could even go back and do that. Like, I don't know. The process of getting in the door is so complicated that you kind of, I feel like you have to start when you're 22.
I'm kind of feeling the same way about that kind of thing in life right now. You know, I do freelance copywriting, and it's something that I got into doing just because I used to write parody songs for a drag queen 12 years ago. And it was just kind of like people knew me from that, and then my name got passed on to do other things, and now I do freelance copywriting work, and I'm trying to get more and more jobs doing that. And it's kind of the same thing, Mike, where people are like, "Where did you go to school for this?" I was like, "Well, I went to school for musical theater." But I'm like, "If you just let me do the job, I promise you're going to be really happy with the work." You know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing, is you just kind of have to start. When you're our age, you just have to start doing the thing and then hoping someone recognizes it for you,
Whenever you say our age, I'm like, thanks, Elise.
But you know what I mean? Like people over, I honestly think over 30 is when, you know, you can't apply to be an intern anymore. There was that movie, The Intern.
That is true.
And he was old.
So if Robert De Niro can do it,
so can you, Mike. So yeah, we're here to talk about Bomb Cyclone, which in the last episode, I was like, I know what that is, but I don't know what that is. And it is kind of what I thought. It was a name for like a lot of snow.
Yes. And we'll kind of get into that too as we go up for the new names we've come up with for when it's snowy, yeah, or stormy out. Because I feel like we have new terms now, which, thanks, global warming. So we start out with Carrie at the window with, I see that ring light. I'm like, oh, yeah, the ring light. I don't actually own a ring light, which some may know from my appearance on the news program that one day when the two of you were beautifully lit and I was like in a dungy little room with no natural light.
You don't own a ring light?
I don't. There are like 8 of them in my apartment. I just don't own any of them. So I could have just borrowed one.
I have a huge ring light and I have the pop-up self-tape background for like my commercial auditions. And they have both seen better days. My pop-up, I mean, Mike can see, it's like behind my couch because it no longer pops down. And then my ring light no longer stays standing. So I have to prop it up with this Victorian iron from like 1902 to just keep it from not just falling over.
And it's the very modern thing of like trying to make the computer camera high mm-hmm. enough with like the perfect lighting. We do establish this is Sunday morning. I do want to point out this episode takes place over the course of 4 days.
Okay. So someone could fall in love and get married.
That is true. And I don't want to be automatically mean about this girl.
But you don't like her.
This actress is Kate, but she's just an influencer. When I hear that word influencer, I'm like, do I have to buy you brunch now or something?
You're going to be taking a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
Well, did you notice the Sex and the City mug on her desk? That's the only thing she took with her when she left the office.
Oh, no, I didn't see that on Carrie's desk.
Yeah, it's right there. And I do love her propping all that stuff up on books because I do the same thing. You know, I just prop it up. I have like certain books that are higher than others.
And sort of like zooming beats Flying Coach out of Newark. And we begin the hilarious thread, which I didn't catch the first time, but it's the first time that this influencer is like, you're hilarious. And like Carrie being hilarious kind of becomes a thing. And sort of like, how much time do you have? And Carrie making the mistake of saying like, oh, I have plenty of time, an hour. And of course, this influencer is like, oh my God, we won't need that much time.
Yeah. And she's asking, you know, Carrie thinks she's there for a book interview. And it doesn't look like this interviewer is that into it or has researched a lot. And, you know, Carrie finds out very quickly that this influencer hasn't even really read the book. And she's like, but for my followers, what's it about? She's like, it's about death. Hilarious.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah. This actually does remind me of when I used to work on a theater podcast, and I shouldn't say we would show up, the host Patrick would show up with really interesting questions, and the number of times that the guest would be like, wow, you really did your research. I always thought it was such a weird thing to say. And then you watch this and you're like, oh, I guess a lot of people
yeah.
don't.
I've listened to podcasts.
Just tell me something.
Yeah, I've listened to really popular podcasts where the host, they've just gotten information completely wrong about the guest. I can imagine if you and I ever interviewed people, Mike, you would have like, you will have done your research. Because could you imagine if Cynthia Nixon was here and you were afraid of saying the wrong thing?
I would have a million very specific questions prepared.
Yes, you would be 100% ready. And yeah, and she goes, that's hilarious. And there's a Strangers with Candy episode where Jerry Blank just keeps saying things are hilarious that are just completely inappropriate. So yeah, that's all.
And we end with the very important question of what lipstick shades are you loving right now? And then I do love that the laptop mercifully just falls to the ground.
And then we cut to Miranda in a twin bed in Andre's music room, which they've made very clear by all the soundproofing.
I like you put a twin bed, which I'm sure is what I put a child's bed because it looks like she's literally on like she doesn't even like fit.
So I moved to New York City with a twin bed and I'm not tiny. I'm 5'10", but lately people have been telling me I'm not, and they think I'm closer to 5'11" or and above. But it's also men telling me that because they're like, no, I'm 5'10", so you're taller. And I'm like, I think you might be lying. but also, when I moved here, I had a twin bed, and I would just fall out of it sometimes. Like, I would roll over and just fall on the floor.
I think I have not had anything smaller than a queen size bed since I was like 12 years old. Queen. And it's light out and Miranda assumes that she's late for something and Naya letting her know that it's 10 a.m. but also mm-hmm. it's Sunday.
And Naya is working on her divorce papers. Naya has a no fault divorce. Miranda has an all my fault divorce.
Ha ha ha.
And do you think, well, this is what I thought, that Miranda will have to put on lawyer pants and help Naya at some point?
I did wonder about that.
But then later on,
because she kind of puts on her own lawyer pants.
Yeah. And then we cut to the Wexley Sunday morning.
I put the Todd Wexleys.
Oh, sorry. The Todd Wexley.
That's okay. And Rock's ad is out.
Yeah, Rock's ad is out. And then she said, I'm going to call Charlotte. And I'm surprised Charlotte wouldn't know. But we find out Charlotte does know because Charlotte, Anthony, and Harry are having Sunday morning together. Anthony has his challah. He showed up with 10 papers.
Which I did at first wonder why Anthony was there. Because it's like, why would Anthony just randomly be there? But no, he's the one that showed up with the papers.
Yes, and I do like that they are giving us a reason. Because every time I've been like, I get that we love Anthony. We want Anthony around. But, you know, you're not always just going to have your friend show up all the time.
He's just sort of randomly there at dinner a lot of the time. Yeah.
But there's always a reason.
And we have, you know, Charlotte calling the pictures beautiful. And that beautiful is gender mm-hmm. neutral.
But Anthony says they're a rock star.
Well, Rock doesn't like being the good kid. And then I wrote, I wonder if maybe Lily doesn't either, because Lily has a couple of moments where you kind of see her face not reacting super well to the situation.
Oh, you don't think Lily likes Rock being the good kid?
A little bit. I think that Lily's not super wild about Rock getting all the attention.
Well, I think modeling when you're a teenager is like the dream job. I think everyone just thinks like, I'm going to be a model. And so if your sibling is the model and you're not the model, like, I think it's just all about Rock getting more celebrity.
And not only is Rock a model, but so is Gabby.
Gabby,
and so
yeah.
Gabby is a model and starts jumping and then jumps right on Herbert's way.
Yeah, I said Herbert's weenie.
Okay. Either way, they're both technical terms.
Yes.
And then everybody out, and Lily asks Charlotte about Charlotte's person at Nobu. And Charlotte says that she hasn't called yet, she will, and it's too late, like, you'll never get a reservation now. And I do like Anthony's thing of, like, you're a kid, go to Shake Shack and call it a day. And we do establish that Lily is 17, which, on one hand, doesn't necessarily make sense, because it seems like she should at least be 18 if you look at the math. But it also makes her old enough that we can be less uncomfortable with what's about to happen.
Because is that the age of consent in New York State?
I think that 16 might be the age of consent in New York, and I'm not going to test that out, but I feel like I've heard that before. But like 17 with, I think that 17 feels like at least a responsible age with another teenager.
17 years old. In New York, the legal age of consent is 17. That means that anyone who engages in sexual activity with a person under the age of 17 can be charged with statutory rape. So that means, because a lot of times in high school that happens, but Lily is 17. We're hoping that Blake is 17 as well. Ideally, not a second older, because I'm already uncomfortable with all of this. Yeah, Shake Shack, we would have never, I mean, I didn't even know what a Nobu was. We were going to, well, we would go to National Coney Island. Coney Islands are like diners in the Detroit area, but we also really started loving Old Country Buffet, which is like a buffet. And me and my friends would just go there and have the best time. We called it OCB.
We were mostly Sherry's and Denny's.
Okay.
Sherry's for the nice night, Denny's if you were a little more
laid
back.
Well, yeah, and then Big Boy, because that's when, you know, the mozzarella sticks and hot fudge experience was originated.
Gross. And yeah, Lily says she can't lose her virginity after lunch at Shake Shack. And they all take a pause. And yeah, she's ready to lose her virginity. And Harry's ready to lose his hearing.
Yes. And I was just thinking, why would she announce something like that? Like, thank you, Harry.
I think that she a little bit wants attention. I think she a little bit wants to be
right.
Like, I'm here too.
Yeah, and we get that.
As Anthony points out, Anthony once set his sister's coat on fire for attention, so.
Anthony was probably, as our friend Jesse would say, a tiny tyrant as a child. Yeah.
And then Lisa asks about Herbert's penis situation.
Yeah, and then we find out that Herbert has an event and LTW has an event. And there's a little bit of tension between not going to one another's events. But this whole storyline, all I think about is, he said he wasn't going to do this for you. And you were the one that decided that he was going to do this.
Well, I'm a little of two minds about it.
And his wiener hurts.
Well, yeah, it's a 46, and if it's broken, she's out of here. And we have to, you know, she says, you laugh, but I'm dead serious, which is to set up him saying it later. Yeah, the deputy mayor has confirmed the Wall Street event on Wednesday, which is the same date as her talk back at MoMA. And I love, and Michael Patrick King talks about this, when Herbert is like, you're still doing that? And she has her thing of like,
yeah, my career, I'm still doing that.
Just very, very good. And then we get Dick 3 Fundraiser 10. I'm sure is not actually a play on Dance 10 Looks 3, but is all that I thought of when I heard it.
Good musical theater reference, Mike Jensen.
Thank you. And then he responds with a, you laugh, but I'm dead serious. So we have the callback to her line.
I had a text from a friend saying that I missed a theater reference and they were disappointed in me. And I was like, oh, you mean 3 weeks from Fiddler on the Roof? Yeah, I knew it, but I just didn't say it because people get mad at me when I make too many of them.
And then Charlotte goes to talk to Lily, who and asks her not to play her music because it makes everything seem so sad.
Well, the funny thing is, if you have the captions on, it just says melancholy melody.
And, you know, today's the big day and not anymore because Blake's parents decided not to go to Connecticut to see Lainey.
Mm-hmm.
I just added the Lainey.
Oh, I was going to say, wait, did I miss that?
That's what I think when I hear Connecticut now.
Yeah, she has to go to Connecticut. Could you imagine? Oh my gosh, that would be great fan fiction if Blake was the child of Lainey and Connecticut. So anyway, yeah. So, you know, Charlotte is happy Lily opened up to her about this because her parents didn't talk about this and she's always tried to be sex positive. And Lily doesn't really want to talk about this, but Charlotte said you went public with the information. I'm wondering, I was just waiting for the shot of Richard Burton where he's just like, once again, I don't want to be here for this.
You know, you act as though Richard Burton can't just leave a room.
He shouldn't have to. They should talk around him. And Charlotte says, condoms, obviously, and I want you to focus on your pleasure as much as his pleasure. And I want to turn off my TV. I'm so uncomfortable.
So we don't have to have the full conversation, but there is something about how we don't, and I'm not saying that we do when it comes to like teenage guys, but we are very uncomfortable with teenage girls and sexuality.
Yeah.
And I will fully say that, like, yes, it is uncomfortable, but I like that this show is kind of trying to move us through that. Mm-hmm. Of like, what if that was the new thing that mothers said to their daughters? Of like, just make sure that you're having a good time. Like, I think that's actually really healthy and, yes, uncomfortable, but also important.
I just want both teams to win.
Listen, I don't think anyone should have sex until they're like 34. Like, I don't know when one becomes emotionally ready to have that experience.
You're like, until you're 48 and you don't even feel like it anymore. Well, also, yeah. I mean, I will say that I think as a teenage, maybe it's like for men too, because they get to talk too about like, if this happens, then you better be ready, blah, blah, blah. But I think for women, like, it's also a lot of fear. It's just like a really fearful thing, you know?
Yeah. So now we're at the Apple store that I think we went to once.
Yeah, I think it's the one on the Upper East Side.
And her laptop has leapt to its death, mm-hmm. which Seema says makes it a good computer. And we bring up that she had the computer for 8 years, which I also like and think is interesting because I feel like we go through these phases where Carrie's had the same computer since she was 22 years old.
Well, we also get to the reason why, where Seema is always updating tech and Carrie is a loyal and she even still has a travel agent.
Yeah, which I do like.
Which I am Carrie in a lot of these ways. You know, I'm not going to update my computer just because a new one came out. I'll update it when this one breaks. My phone, I have the iPhone X, which I think is like an old one.
Yeah, I don't upgrade until the other one is so dead that sometimes I can't even salvage things from it, which isn't necessarily better, but yeah, is its own thing.
Well, and I don't know if it would be different if we also had a lot of money. It probably would be different.
Maybe. And Seema has something to ask, and Carrie says that she can have the left kidney, but it's actually about sharing a summer house. She wants to get a 2-bedroom, 3-bathroom on the beach, and it's a proposal that Carrie accepts.
Yeah, they're going to the Hamptons.
So we're at Miranda and Shay's, and then I wrote after that, I was like, but is it both of theirs? Because I don't know that we've actually, it's really probably
Shay's. Yeah, I said Miranda at Shay's post-work.
Sure, that probably makes more sense.
Yeah, they're at a post-work session. Shay is not in a snuggle space. And then they decide to go to bed, and then Che just rolls over and just starts doing a full-out cameo.
And I wrote, Che, you're making it hard for me to be on your side.
Mm-hmm.
I always try to see, I know that Che is a much beleaguered character. I always try really hard to see their side of things. And in this instance, I'm like, no, maybe don't wait until bedtime to do the cameos.
Yeah, I think the only thing I can think of, and I've heard this from people who are quote-unquote influencers and like internet personalities and things, that you do get to this point where you never know when to stop working. You don't really have clear boundaries around, you know, and I have a dear friend of mine is like a TikToker and is great with this, has like wonderful boundaries, does all these things, like can definitely turn it off. But I've had friends that are saying things like, I don't know how to not do this. And I always feel like anytime I'm asked to do something, I need to drop everything and do it at once. And I think Che is in so much fear right now because they just lost their show. They don't know how they're going to pay for this apartment. And so they are going to do these cameos. But what I will say is that the cameos are a ripoff because Che is not giving $25 worth of cameo there.
Yeah. And sort of like, what's that voice? And Che's followers don't know that their career is over. And then there's a tit on her phone.
Yeah.
And I like Miranda's thing of like, I'm not threatened. I'm worried. Like, apparently Che hasn't left the apartment. And Miranda wants Che to talk to a real person. It's like, yeah, because that's going so well for me right now. And Miranda gets up to go and Che says not to leave pissed. And I like Miranda being like, well, I am. I am pissed.
Yeah.
Why do I get sullen, sad, sack Che? And I will say that I've been in this position before. Like, I have been around and dated people who I'm like, why are you so nice to everyone else?
But me.
Like, my very first boyfriend when I was like 22. I remember at some point being like, you are so much nicer to everyone else in your life than you are to me. And it's not about chasing of like, because I'm not performing for you. And I'm like, I don't want you to perform. I want you to not be an asshole, which is what this situation feels like to me.
Yeah. And social media is for pretending your life isn't falling apart.
Which I get. I get that if that's part of your career, like I do social media just to be like, hey, I saw this cool thing. And I guess if my career depended upon, I don't know. I this is where I get very, very negative on the social media.
I would want a Che Diaz cameo, though, if it involved like an angry Miranda Hobbs just kind of waking up in the background. That would be fun.
That'd be a good one. And I like Miranda's thing of like, don't talk to me like that. I don't deserve that. Yeah. And Che even agrees.
Yeah.
And basically Miranda tells Che that Miranda's going to go and try to leave the house this week.
And now we're at Carrie's agent's office, Amanda. And this is something small, but there is a bottle of spray hand sanitizer. It actually kind of looks like this. And it is stealing the scene. It's like this, the whole scene. I'm putting a spray hand sanitizer in between me and Mike. But it is just front and center. And I really noticed that. But she is amping Carrie up for a widow con. And that seems a bit much.
Well, yeah, it's a rock concert for sad people, so like a Wilson Phillips concert,
excuse me,
which you've been to before.
The shoppers at Lohmann's in Chelsea were not sad. We were happy to be getting designer clothes at bargain prices.
But then I also think it's a funny where then she's like, the event coordinators here don't call it WidowCon. And I'd be like, then why did you call it WidowCon? Because you're the one that said that.
It's actually Life After Death, a widow storytelling event. I know, I have a case of plantar fasciitis right now, and I just call it Waiterfoot.
And then it's Rachel Dratch. And I wrote it first. I'm like, are we supposed to know her? It was Molly Shannon in the series, right? And we're not supposed to know her. This is someone from Carrie's past.
I did the same thing. I was like, was Rachel Dratch in the original Sex and the City?
Yeah. It took me. I was like, I know that she wasn't, but you're fooling me. Like, you're making me think that I'm remembering this wrong. And no, this is someone that Carrie knew in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Karen Moore. I love her thing of like, Moore, because I always leave you wanting more. I'm like, that's why you're... Dad's last name was Moore.
Yeah. In the 1600s, when they settled in Scotland, they said, let's leave them wanting more.
And this, then now she goes by Carrie with a K because it's not a good time for white Karens. And we go way back. They were writing partners, but really their agency paired them up. And I wrote, Carrie with a K clearly thinks this was a big deal. And Carrie with a C thought it was just a meeting at Starbucks.
And someone didn't show up for their final pitch.
Was it him or me? I honestly have no idea. I was drunk a lot in the 90s.
And I love, okay, once again, I know that I talk about my love for Sarah Jessica Parker. These are the scenes. These are the scenes in which I just love her so much.
Well, and I love Rachel. It's just, I think it's more when you see, not that the other actors on this show are not talented. That's not what I'm saying. But when you see actors that just get it and know how to perform and do it.
Well, and in a comedic scene like this, where it's such volleyball, where it's such like setting up, spiking, and then the next person comes in. Oh, a sport thing I just talked about a little bit. That was nuts. Where like you see the two of them just like going back and forth, and even down to like, left me holding your mochaccino order.
And that's the kind of comedy that would have made our movie a huge hit. But someone left me all alone holding her mochaccino order.
Oh, I sense that was me, even though I've never had a mochaccino.
Yeah, they're great.
Oh, it makes me really happy. So good. And then Amanda leaves to let them catch up. And like, how mad were you when 27 Dresses came out?
Never saw it, so not at all.
They totally ripped off our script. Remember? Our main character didn't want to wear her ugly bridesmaid dress.
Well, I mean, the bridesmaid experience, it's a pretty common movie trope.
Not the way you and I wrote it. I mean, if only you had showed up for that meeting.
Damn me.
And then Carrie with a K said it's all in the past. And I wrote, but is it?
Yeah, I don't think. I said someone might need to talk about this in therapy. But she pulled some strings. Carrie with the K pulled some strings so that Carrie with the C could have the main spot. So don't you flake out on me this time.
Carrie's rarely drunk these days.
Yeah.
And we cut to Che clearly getting some important work done.
Yeah, Che is doing weed and eating pirate's booty. And Carrie calls Che to go with her to WidowCon.
And Carrie's at 74th and Madison, which I think is kitty corner to the Apple store that she was at earlier.
Okay.
Just a thing I noticed.
She just was...
She hasn't moved very far. And yeah, I don't know. So this is one of those stories that I feel like is a story to further the story, if that makes any sense. Like, I feel like this is mostly to get Che out of the house. I'm not really into it and I'm over Che, but okay, I'll try. That was my full sentence.
Yeah, I think it's mostly to get out of the house. I think it's mostly so we can set up this idea that Carrie has stage fright.
And I think it's to get Che to like a new mindset. And it makes sense as far as that goes. I don't fully buy the mechanics behind it, but I'll allow it for where it's going to get us. And my mommy said I have to leave the house at some point this week.
Yeah. So we see some tension building. Well, it's already built, but we see it bubbling. And then Carrie and Charlotte go to Naya's in Brooklyn, and Naya is making paella. Yeah, and Carrie brought a gorgeous cab for them and this impasta for Miranda. And honestly, Carrie could have done better because there is a non-alcoholic drink store. There's a few of them throughout New York. There's one on the Upper East Side called Boisson. Non-alcoholic cocktails have come so far, and the one she got is the one they sell at like Gristiti's. It's not very good. It reminds me of when I was first getting sober and my friend Tom would host all these parties and people would always bring like Martinelli's sparkling grape juice for me. And I'm like, thanks for the thought, but I don't really want this. And then Tom had a liquor cabinet just full of juice.
Just 10,000 Martinelli bottles.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that I had a moment where I did not understand the imposter wine. Took me a second to be like, oh, right. And good for, and Michael Patrick King did say, like, it was important to them that we keep this storyline right. going. And then I also did write one bottle for the three of them. But that's the other side of the equation. And yeah, warm grape Kool-Aid.
Yep.
And then we get a text from Andre, and they had a bad breakup, so they're trying to have a good divorce. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? No restraining orders?
Yeah, you can tell Miranda's jealous in this moment. And then Charlotte brings up Trey. She thought she'd keep in touch with Trey, but he didn't want that.
I appreciate it, though. I still appreciated them. I was like, oh, we're going to mention Trey. That's cool. We haven't mentioned him in literally a decade.
Yeah, I just thought it was weird because I don't know who would want to keep in touch with Trey.
Well, I suppose it's on her side, thinking like, I did love him. He was my husband. And it seems very yes to me that he would not want to keep in touch with her.
And also, did Trey not want to keep in touch with her, or did Bunny not want Trey to keep in touch with her? We don't know.
I bet it's a little bit of both. And do you think that you and Steve will be friends after the divorce? And they can't even talk about divorce. And the idea that one of you will have to bring it up. And Miranda feels like she has to wait for Steve. And this brings Carrie to finally tell her something.
Yeah, Carrie doesn't think that's the best approach because of something Steve said about never taking his wedding ring off months ago. And Miranda's mad Carrie didn't tell her.
Well, I love Sherry's, like, aww, that would be so romantic if it wasn't. And then Miranda being like, my life? Why didn't you tell me? And before I listened to the podcast, I did think to myself, wow, this has certain reverberations of a time that Miranda didn't tell Carrie something.
Also, you said Sherry, but I think you meant Charlotte. But I like Sherry.
I feel like I do that every once in a while. I feel like I call Charlotte Sherry.
It's just a fun nickname we have for her.
Sure. And Carrie didn't want to give her another thing to torture herself about. Mm-hmm. And now she wants to light a fire under her.
Yeah. And Miranda is shocked by all of this because Carrie says she doesn't think that Steve will ever be ready to just magically move on. And Miranda seems shocked, but she has to remember that Steve didn't want this. He just can't move on like she did. It's not like Steve had, you know, weeks to think about this. It's not like Steve had another person on the side. Like, Miranda chose this.
And Carrie has come across an ex that she didn't remember that she had. And she has more baggage with Carrie with a K than Aiden, which Naya now says this is something that she's interested in.
And Charlotte makes a, oop, face.
Yeah. And we find out that Carrie knows some stuff.
Mm-hmm. He's living in Virginia now and got divorced 5 years ago and sold his furniture company to West Elm for a pretty penny. She knows all of this even though they haven't talked because internet.
There you go. And now we have Carrie writing to Aiden, which is basically what we've seen before.
Yeah.
Other than the very end of it, which is basically like, if this isn't you, carry on.
Right. And the thing that I found interesting is that she says, if this isn't you, carry on. Because I don't believe that emails are like phone numbers where other people would just get Aiden's old email address and then just start receiving someone's old emails.
Yeah, probably not.
And then she doesn't send it and closes the computer. And at first, I just thought this was a dumb like directorial thing where they just forgot to watch her hit send. But no, she doesn't send it and closes the computer. Yeah.
And Carrie and Seema are looking at houses at a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom, which even I was like, that's probably not going to work. And it's 1,050 square feet. And Seema says their bags and shoes will need more room than that.
Yeah. And then she gets up to let Seema take over the search. And I thought in this moment, something was going to happen. Either the email was going to get sent by Seema or Seema was going to see the email, something.
And it's sort of that.
Yeah.
You know, it is sort of that thing where Seema sees the email and almost sends it because her computer's too fast. And all of Seema's emails to her exes start, "Hope you're doing well," and end with a screenshot of her bank account.
What if I just started screenshotting people in my bank account? Maybe they'd Venmo me.
Like, here's my $67 in my savings account. Jealous.
Yeah, and they're like, so-and-so has Venmoed you. Please eat something.
And Carrie says it's not like that with her and Aiden.
Mm-hmm.
And Seema only wants to hear more if he has a steam shower and a two-car garage south of the highway. And frankly, we don't know that he doesn't.
Yeah, so he sold that pretty penny. Wisdom.
Yeah. And we get a two-bedroom, two-bathroom, 3,250 square feet with a pool. Do you take this house? I do. Do you? I already did. Which is, I kind of thought that's where this was going. I was like, Seema probably already has a house. I feel like we're kind of spinning our wheels here.
Yeah, I don't like Seema right now. I don't know. Seema kind of annoys me.
Ooh, listen, yeah. No, I had some thoughts in this episode where I was like, wow, Seema's a friend you want around sometimes.
Well, here's what I think they were trying to do, and I could be wrong. I think that they were trying to have Samantha energy without Samantha. Like, have that, you know, older, because Seema does present older. I don't know if she's supposed to be older than...
She's not. No, she's not. I've looked at... I think she's actually younger than
Carrie.
But
she presents like this mature, kind of has everything together, like sexual woman who like owns herself. She has what seems to be like either the most money or the most fabulous life out of the group. And I think they were trying to give you Samantha vibe. But the problem is that we even said this a lot. Samantha was ridiculous. And the fact that Kim Cattrall could get away with being Samantha and us not being like, what the hell is this? Is because Kim Cattrall is so amazing. And not that Sarita Chowdhury's not amazing. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that...
It's just a different vibe.
Yeah.
It's she gives a different vibe. She gives a different flavor. And I like it, but it's
different.
It's not the same. And it shouldn't be this. I'm not saying that it should be the same. And maybe it's just history. Like, maybe it's just that we got to know Samantha over so many years. And with Seema, I'm kind of like... I kind of know you, and you're a lot. I don't know. Once again, nothing against her or the character or the actress. I'm just kind of like, oh, I don't
know. Like, I almost feel like Seema's going to do something mean. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I think it's just, I don't dislike Seema. I don't dislike Sarita Chowdhury's acting. I don't know. I'm having a hard time with this character. But also, I'm not supposed to like every person in every show, because that's not life.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then Carrie's getting a call from Che, and you're up early, excited about WidowCon. Don't call it that. And that's why Che's calling. It's quite the snowstorm.
Yeah, turning into a bomb cyclone. Yes.
And Carrie says it's so pretty. Yeah, and do we have the sort of thing of like, we can't expect the Widows to get there now. And Carrie brings up, well, they've been at the Sheridan since Tuesday, which I believe was yesterday. Because her speech is on Wednesday.
Okay,
so it's funny that she says they've been there since Tuesday as though that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and Carrie has to show up because Carrie wouldn't let her live it down.
Yeah, I do like the like...
Did you just refer to yourself in the third person?
No. Carrie's my old writing partner. She runs the thing and she's already expecting me to be a no-show, so I can't be a snowflake.
I thought you were going to sell books and read to grieving widows.
And Carrie wants to do a good job for these women because their husbands died and Che's a little grumbly, and then Carrie's like, so did mine. And I do want to be like, I know this isn't the point. I know it's not the journey, it's the destination. I know that Che wants to stay in their quiet apartment where no one is bothering them. The subway's right there. Like, you barely have to go outside.
It's probably connected to your apartment building. They probably have, yeah.
Probably. And then in the end, it's I'll see you at one. And I'm just going to bring this up because I thought it was so funny, and I don't think that Michael Patrick King is trying to steal my life, but... I thought this situation was so interesting because I want to say in January of 2018 was the first ever Broadway con, which I'm almost positive took place at the Sheridan and was like snowed out. Like the snow was so bad. I have a picture looking out my building's front door where you can't see outside because the snow has coated everything. And Patrick and I got on the train because it was, you know, our train station is right there and went to the Sheridan. It was such a thing of like certain people had made it and certain hadn't. But I just thought it was funny that it's the Sheridan and a convention and a crazy snowstorm. And I'm like, did someone on the writing staff also go to that particular convention?
Did you speak at that?
I didn't know. We were just there as guests. It was the very first year. I've never spoken at one before. Patrick has had panels there before. But we just kind of like went and got to go to various things. And I think they were kind of happy to have anyone there. And I know that there were certain actors who like were on every panel for 3 days because so many people hadn't been able to make it in. And I'm sure, but I just thought it was funny. It just was such a funny coincidence to me that like,
right,
same hotel, same weather, also a convention. So just had to bring it
up. Quit stalking us, MP. Okay.
Right? Or give me a job. Except for I'm probably not qualified to be a writer's assistant. So just make me a writer. Just trust me.
Yeah, he's qualified. And then we go to Charlotte, and Charlotte is making hot cocoa. But Lily is going to Blake's for Seg's time because Blake's parents are stuck in Connecticut with Lainey.
Which I thought they weren't going to, right? I'm a little confused by this.
I don't know.
But I guess they did decide to go. Okay.
And then I love that Harry just doesn't want to hear about it.
Yeah, because Charlotte tells her to wait and Lily's not going to hug her. And Harry asks Charlotte where Lily is going and she's going to do the thing you said you didn't want to hear about. And then we get to Lisa, and Lisa's car has been canceled because of the storm, and Herbert says that means that she can come to his thing. Because
mm-hmm.
he has a Tahoe coming. And I'm like, no, that's not at all what it means, Herbert.
But Herbert's driver got a Tahoe. Lisa doesn't want him to drop her off. I don't understand.
Well, so now, yeah, I have, thanks. Same thing, where I get that her thing is like, MoMA is honoring her, and she's going to take a dog sled if she has to. And then, yeah, Herbert offers to drop her off. And listen, I get that we're going to go for the visual, and I get that we're going to go for like, no, LTW is going to get there any way she can. Also, he can just drop you off.
Yeah, and I just don't understand this competition, because she is the reason why he is doing it.
Correct.
So
I'm a little, it is a little bit murky to me, and this is where it happens. And I thought it would be a bigger thing, where he says, you do you, and she, not to borrow from the outdoor weather, but pretty icily is like, yes, I will do me. And I'm like, are you mad at him for going to an event for a thing that you volunteered him to do when he just wants to drop you off at your thing on the way there?
I think there's probably a lot happening that we don't know about betwixt them.
Sure.
But sure, yeah. Okay. And then there's this moment where we see LTW take off her wig and put her hat on.
And trekking through the snow, and it's sort of all in black and white except for one bright pink bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then Charlotte, Harry, and Rock are watching Edward Scissorhands, and Lily calls.
I love this movie.
You know, I'm not sure that I've ever seen it all the way through.
Wow.
I know that I've seen it, but I'm not sure we're like sat and watched it from beginning to end.
It's so funny. Like, I never understood ASMR. It's not like Bitcoin where no one tells me about it. It was just something that I was like, that might be something that's not for me. But there's a scene in Edward Scissorhands where Diane Wiest, who you never got to see play a rock,
no,
is playing an Avon lady, and she's applying makeup to Edward. And a lot of people say it's like one of the best ASMR scenes in cinema because just the sounds and like the way she's talking. And as a kid, I used to rewind that scene over and over again, and I didn't know why. I was like, I just feel so relaxed watching Diane Wiest be like, mixing the lavender makeup and putting it on his face. And yeah, maybe it's Diane Wiest. Maybe that's what I was mesmerized by.
She is a genius. That is true. And Blake doesn't have condoms, of course.
Ugh.
And he's afraid to get them at the drugstore because they might tell his parents.
Yeah, I'm not going to get you guys condoms in a blizzard. Harry gets mad.
No, it's the best, though. We're like, Harry walks into the room, hears the word condoms, turns around, walks out of the room. It's such a great moment.
But don't worry, Blake Googled how to pull out, and we can try that.
That just means he watched porn. That's all that is.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not a person with a weenie, but I think that's pretty self-explanatory.
Oh, God. So now Charlotte is trekking, and she's at 83rd and Madison, and this was really on the corner, and apparently they blanketed an entire block or two with snow.
So fun fact about this whole experience, I belong to a few Upper East Side Facebook groups, and I remember the day this happened because people were like, does anyone know why it's snowing right now on 83rd and Madison? And someone's like, oh, they're filming something. I didn't know what they were filming. Now I find it out. And also, so that's the Madison Apothecary, and they have, you can't see it here, but especially during the spring and summer, they have the most gorgeous outdoor decorations. They will cover that corner with these like beautiful flowers and vines. And the other day they had a sign in the window that just said, we have Ozempic.
Oh, maybe Ozempic is right for you.
Yeah.
Not you, but you know what I mean. And now is the shopkeeper saying no one came in supposed to be a sex joke?
No, I think he's saying that he's the janitor. He doesn't actually work there. Like, he doesn't, sure. He's not a cashier because he's sweeping. And I think he's wearing he's like, no one came in.
And it doesn't matter that Charlotte's now going to scream, but my daughter needs condoms.
Yeah, I don't think, if that was the person who was able to run the register or had keys to the register, I think that they would just be like, yeah, I'll sell these to you. But no one came in, I think, just means like none of the employees that can sell you shit came here today.
That makes more sense. I was a little confused. And then now we have Carrie trekking in her comforter that she's turned into a gown.
Yeah, Carrie is the most outrageous yet most Carrie outfit. I believe this is a Montclair coat.
Yeah, they talked about it, that they had seen this and they weren't even sure they could get it, but they were like, that's what she should be wearing.
Yeah.
And Charlotte calls saying it's an emergency.
Yeah, and that she's around the corner from her. But it's not that far, like, where Carrie's apartment is. So it's only probably, like, a 15-minute walk. But in that weather, it's going to take a while.
And you were having sex with that guy, Franklin, so you must have condoms. And do you think I was worried about getting pregnant? And I guess this is where I come with, like, I don't know. She didn't know Franklin that well. He could have had an STD.
Well, there's a few things. Like, Carrie, of course, wouldn't have a condom. Nobody used a condom in Sex in the City.
Yeah, that is very
true. And
yeah.
Also, Carrie, we say STI now.
True.
And also, let's just take a moment for Lily, because this is probably one of the first times on this show that anyone has outwardly said, I need condoms.
We should really be congratulating her here. And Carrie couldn't even get her mom to pick up her after school. Carrie had a troubled childhood.
Yeah. Yikes.
And then we have a Let It Go joke, and it's fine.
And then we have LTW at the MoMA. This actually was shot at the MoMA, in the MoMA bathroom, and they had to get there super early to do this. I think she looks very unscathed, considering the weather.
Very well put together, and I do like her moment with Gail Turner, who plays MoMA Lady.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, like, we're not going to let a snow stop us, are we?
No, because in this moment, LTW is taking her hat off and putting her wig on.
And after coat check, that was clearly a point they wanted to make, and they even talk about that Carrie had to go to coat check just in case. They hadn't actually filmed her in the big coat yet, but just in case they got the big coat, they were like, she has to be coming from coat check because she just checked that giant coat.
It would be funny to have, they talked about this, but it would be funny to have like a coat check person in the back with that coat, like, what the fuck?
Just like on top of them, just like they've been taken over by the coat. And Carrie spots Che looking like a Christmas tree guy.
Yeah, and they're selling vibrators at WidowCon. The Widow Wand is on back order.
And then Julie White.
What was that?
Julie White is the actress we're about to see on stage.
I know, but I just wanted you to do that moment again.
Julie White.
Yeah.
I love her. I love this actress so much. I was so excited to see
her.
What
are your favorite things of Julie White's?
Well, I feel like most people would know her either from her sitcom. It was Brett Butler's sitcom called Grace Under Fire. And she was like the best friend. She's also the mom on the Transformer movies. She plays Shia LaBeouf's mom. I hope she got paid really well for that. I think of her from theater because I was lucky enough to see her in her Tony Award winning performance in, oh, now I'm going to blank on it, Little Dog Laughs, I believe was the name of it, in which she was unbelievably hilarious. She was so good. Yeah, Little Dog Laugh was a play by Douglas Carter Bean. It was kind of a sort of, I don't want to say that it was based on it, it's sort of about the idea of a famous actor who is in the closet. And she plays his agent, and she's outrageously funny, and she won the Tony Award over a lot of big names that year. I've seen her on stage in a few things. I saw her doing Gary, the sequel to Titus Andronicus. I saw her in a really amazing little play called Airline Highway, I think it was called. Anyway, she's an amazing, amazing theater actor, and I was so thrilled to see her pop up here. And she plays Maddie Thomas.
Yes, the Don Rickles of death. I will say that the material written for Maddie is much better than the material written for Che. Maybe Julie White wrote it herself.
I'm going to say, I'm not sure. I feel like you put like a really in there that I might not use, but it is, I wrote, she's really selling the okay comedy that the audience is going crazy for. And yeah, she's like the Don Rickles of death. I think a lot of it is her delivery, that Julie White knows how to tell. Not that Sada doesn't, but like Julie White isn't going for the subtlety of
right.
it. She's going for the like zany, over the top. And, you know, I like Carrie's thing of like, I missed the memo that death is now funny.
Yeah. And really wants Che to give her some joke to use, something.
Yeah. Cause Carrie with a K is shocked that Carrie with a C made it. And Maddie Thomas is a tough act to follow. Now follow me. And yeah, Carrie's thing of like, my book doesn't have any laughs, at best a sarcastic smile. And Carrie asks Che to write her a joke. And Che doesn't think anything is funny these days.
And then I need something. And then.
So it's kind of like, well, the Widow Wand, that's funny.
Right.
doesn't come with a lifetime guarantee, and neither did your husband. And, all right, we can do something with that. And then, of course, right then, Maddie also brings up the vibrator of, like, if I'm having an orgasm, my husband is definitely not present.
Yes. And then Carrie with a K is introducing the New York Times best-selling author and always hilarious.
And we're back with the hilarious. So, but once again, we didn't say it, but there have been so many mentions of, like, the hilarious, and, like, we think that Carrie is very, very funny, but of course, the more someone is pitched as the hilarious, the more the pressure gets. And I said, okay, I put forward that if Maddie's jokes were basically pee your pants funny, then the widow's wand on back order should at least get a chuckle.
Well, and also I think that, yes, and also I think, did nobody read Carrie's book? If she is the keynote speaker, they would know that she's not going to be delivering a comedy.
Well, but that is the reason in which I let them get away with this.
Okay.
Because I do wonder if the audience isn't like, we know you're not funny, go ahead and read us your book.
Right.
And that's what I do wonder about. And so Carrie's going to read from her book, and then we cut to MoMA and LTW's movie, The Black Gaze. And we have Lisa on stage with Jennifer. This is Asmerette Gebremichael.
Yeah.
She was in Legally Blonde, the musical, and Submissions Only, and We Crash, and the other two. She's done a good amount of work. And we get a Snowpocalypse reference.
Let's talk about your film. The three black women you follow are absolute powerhouses. I mean, what made you decide to choose them, given so many firsts in our history?
I decided to start with women who broke down barriers in business, education, and law. Women who were doing so when the world was telling them, no, you can't, no, you shouldn't, no, you won't. I have a daughter, and I want her to know, I want all of our young people to know about the many unsung sheroes who built America.
It took her 8 years of research, and then Herbert walks in.
Yeah, and Lisa acknowledging the support that she received at home. And I will be honest, I didn't get emotional, but I got emotional, if that makes any sense.
Because you saw their love for each other and you want that?
Well, I just thought it was a moving moment of like him kind of coming in. And in fact, apparently there was another scene in which they have a conversation when this whole thing is over. And this moment was so powerful that Michael Patrick King was like, we don't even need it. Let's not even film it. Let's just move on because this is a good enough thing right here. And we get Charlotte arriving at Blake's, who is clearly a multimillionaire.
Yeah, and Charlotte, did you notice that Charlotte has been yelling this whole time? I don't know why snow makes her yell. It's like when you're driving and looking for the place you're going and turn down the radio. Like when she was on the phone with Carrie, when she's yelling at the janitor, when she's outside of Blake's house, she's just yelling.
And Lily's thankful. And Charlotte got an assorted pack and advises her to avoid the warming one because she gets a rash easily down there.
No, she got her the pleasure pack.
Is that what it's called?
Gross.
Elise thinks pleasure is gross.
Oh boy, here we go.
And we do get a hug here and Charlotte leaves but is clearly concerned, sort of waits outside for a minute. And then we're back at the reading.
I thought that over time, my grief would shrink. That it wouldn't fill every inch of me like it had for so long. My sadness never shrank, but I grew and grew until I was so large, the grief just felt smaller. And then I realized it was time. You don't move on because you're ready to. You move on because you've outgrown who you used to be.
Carrie is reading more, and Carrie has affected everyone, including Che. This is just a reminder to everyone, just do what you do.
Right. We have a Carrie Maddie moment backstage of Maddie thanking her for the book. She loved it and just really needed a good cry. And that's what I think the point is that sometimes in pain, we need to laugh. And sometimes in pain, we need to cry. That one is not more valid than the other. And this character of Maddie Thomas is the character there to make us laugh. Mm-hmm. And maybe Carrie's the one that's there to go ahead and let us cry. Like, that's the release that we really actually need. And Che says that Carrie rocked that. And they thank her for her perspective. And you had the loves of your lives die. And I just had my ego die. And it's time for her to move on with her shit. And Che's gonna ski home.
And now here we are.
Woof.
So Miranda is at home folding laundry. Steve comes home. We find out that Brady is working at Scout.
Got a problem with that?
No, I think it's fine.
Just new information.
And Steve can't find an apartment.
There's nothing out there.
And he's not moving.
So is there nothing out there or you didn't look?
Well, he's mad. It's his house.
Okay, yeah, sure he's mad. I almost turned this program off watching this scene. I got, like, my heart, like, I was on fire. Anyways, let's keep going.
It's his house. Miranda's name is on it, but he made it. And I am happy to see Steve get mad. He needed to get mad. I mean, he hasn't gotten mad yet.
I think it is fine to get mad. I think where he goes with his anger is completely inappropriate.
Sure, but I think that happens in life anyway, but we'll get there. And he says, you never wanted to move to Brooklyn. You never wanted me. You never even wanted Brady. So get the F out of our lives. And then he apologizes. But I still think they needed this moment to just yell and settle down.
So here's my issue with these moments, is that I feel like these moments happen on TV programs, which makes it seem like it's normal for them to happen in life. Mm. I think this whole theory of, like, we all know how to hurt the ones we're close to, so we do, is such, like, a dramatic thing that I don't think needs... I have plenty of things I could say to people to hurt them that I would never say. And I'm fine with Steve getting mad. I understand that he needs to utilize his anger to get past this. This just feels so below the belt. You never even wanted Brady. That feels so horrifically inappropriate to me. And then even down to, like, there's nothing out there, I'm not moving. So it's not that there's nothing out there, it's that you're not moving. It was hard for me, and I get it, and I get that we want to give Steve agency, and I understand in the end we turned it around a bit with Steve telling her not to leave, this isn't who we are, stay here with me until we calm down, and then we cut to them spooning.
It's not sexual, they're both wearing shoes.
Which is how you know, because you can't have sex with shoes on.
That would be weird for them to do that. And then that bed, it's snowing out there. With those shoes on? And then, you know, I hate that I hurt you so much.
And she wishes there was something she could do to help him move past.
And then...
What's this?
What's this? This is another, the second time in all of the Sex and the City canon that we will ever see this. A condom sighting. And then we find out that Steve effed the Whole Foods girl.
Because he would never buy organic unless he was trying to impress someone. And I understand this. I understand him being like, I'm not a victim. That's you.
Right.
And that, my understanding of that line is that is actually pointed at the audience.
Yeah, like you...
That the audience decided to make Steve a victim, and he's saying, that's not me. I'm not a victim.
Yeah.
Which is good, because she was worried about him not moving on, and now she can be happy for him and happy for us.
And she's going to start writing the divorce papers.
And she will not be crying on the subway tonight.
No, but I don't think she likes this at all.
I don't think so. No, and... But it's fine, because at least you can go to Che's and be comforted by her love there.
Yes, and Miranda gets to Che and says, I don't know how Steve and I got to this shit show, but we should have split up a long time ago and we could still be friends.
And Che's like, while we're on the subject.
I kind of want to do that right now.
And we get another spoon. And we had back-to-back breakups. She's really killing it here.
And then Carrie sends the email.
Yeah, we're back at Carrie's, and just like that, I realize some relationships are meant to stay in the past, and some aren't. And she takes her earrings off, and for a minute I was trying to figure out if this was, like, symbolic of something, and then I was like, I think she's maybe just taking her earrings off.
And she takes out her in-ear monitors, and we realize that Carrie has been controlled by the ghost of Mr. Big.
This whole time. And there you go. You know, I do want to point out that I said this at the very beginning, that Cynthia Nixon directed this episode, and I... can't imagine how complicated it would be to direct an episode in which you then have to do so much. Because she does a lot in this episode. I feel like there have been ones in the past where at least she's not quite as... like, the emotional pitch that she has to hit in this, I think, would be really difficult if you were also, like, the discerning eye behind the camera. So kudos, Cynthia Nixon.
Kudos. Yeah, and I guess I couldn't help but wonder, what kind of footwear were they all wearing out in the snow? Because we didn't really get to see that. And... in this New York City snow, when they plow it, like, sometimes you're walking up to, like, hip snow.
For real. That is very true. And my understanding is that though some of these scenes were filmed on the Upper East Side, it was a mix. Like, some of them were on a studio, some of them were inside. Like, it was definitely a challenge for the production team to, like, all right, we have to have this scene, but we're going to film it in a warehouse or on a stage, and to make it all look like an outdoor snowstorm, which I thought they did a very good job.
Oh,
I was quite convinced. Yeah. So
it looked very Game of Thrones.
Good job for them as well. Yeah. Winter is coming. I guess I couldn't help but wonder how long Steve was going to go on like this. Because while I understand that, yes, we had to have the scene where Steve expresses his anger, I guess we had to wait till episode 6, and maybe Steve got the memo about that. I just sort of thought, like, you're supposed to be looking for a place and you're not. And how long was that going to go on for? Like, if Miranda had not brought this up, I imagine them as like full on baby Jane, just like living in the same house until they're elderly, of like, Steve, have you thought about finding an apartment? He's like, I looked everywhere for an apartment and I couldn't find it. Like, I don't know. How long was this going to go on for?
Which one's in the curly wig with the makeup?
I can't decide. I can't. You know what? I'm going to say that Miranda's whoever's in the wheelchair.
So Miranda is Blanche.
There we go. Anyway, that's all. So I did enjoy this episode. There were moments that I was a little confused by, but overall, I did like what we got out of this. And yeah, enjoying the journey. So
me too.
I guess that's it. And we'll be back next week.
Bye.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye. Well, and just like that, Elise Castle, we're back.
We're back. We have some new information that we would like to share with you all. So as we stated in the episode before, so I think it was Trick or Treat, you know, we are in full support of the SAG-AFTRA WGA strike, and things have kind of been unclear in general as to what, you know, people are and are not.
The rules have been changing quickly.
Yeah, the rules have been changing, and at first, they said podcasts are fine. And we were under the impression that maybe it was just podcasts where if I was acting on And Just Like That, or if Mike was the producer of And Just Like That. And then things got more and more clear until after we recorded this most recent episode. There's some new information that SAG has released about podcasts. And we're still not 100% sure that this applies to us because we are not employed by the AMPTP and we are not on the show. And
we're also not SAG, nor are we WGA.
But we would like to be.
We would love to be either or both of those things.
And we don't want to cross picket lines, and we are in support of the strike. So basically what we're saying is that, and we have sent emails to SAG. I've sent a few emails. I'm just waiting on a response to kind of hear like what the best way to move forward is. But with these new rules that they've kind of put out there.
So we are going to go on hiatus. We are shutting the podcast down. I could honestly get a little emotional because we've never missed a week. We've, since 5-6 years ago, we've really stayed on schedule and doing these And Just Like That has happened has been really important to both of us, that we are there and that we're talking about it and we get our stuff out as, you know, timely as we can. But and there's every chance that we're not doing anything wrong. And there's every chance that in a day or two we're given a go ahead. And I'd love if Fran Drescher could give me a call, I'd appreciate it. But we also just desperately, desperately don't want to do anything wrong and don't want to do anything that would be construed as not being fully supportive of SAG and the WGA. So for right now, we're going to go on break. And listen, if we hear back in a couple of days, we'll be back next week. If we hear about, like, this is not until the strike is over, maybe, hopefully, who knows? Hopefully it's just until we hear and someone can tell us unequivocally that we're fine, that we're good to go, we're commentary, we're not part of the union. But just the idea of even virtually crossing a picket line makes me deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there that are talking about the strike in more details. I would suggest going to the sagafterstrike.com website and you could read about it a little bit more. There's a lot of people with a lot of information. If Cynthia Nixon or Sada Ramirez wants to come on, we couldn't help but wonder and talk about the strike. We'd be happy to have them. They just seem like the two that would be the most fired up in my mind. You know, and we just want to show that we are in full support of this and we don't want to do anything that we shouldn't be doing. So as far as Still Wondering goes, luckily we have recorded a lot of that already. So we should be able to release most of those. Those were recorded well before any of this happened. But yeah, we will see you guys as soon as we can. Well, we won't see you, but you'll hear us.
I also want to be really clear. We're not happy.
No.
We're not like thrilled. We're not like time off. Like I'm really bummed that we don't get to keep going right now. And once again, as soon as we get an answer that we feel comfortable with, we will start recording and editing and putting things out. Forget about a weekly schedule. We'll try to get this stuff out as quickly as we can. We just have to wait for the go ahead. And hopefully that's sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Or as soon as, you know, the union strike a fair deal, which hopefully comes first.
That would be better. I'd much prefer that.
Yeah.
Union strong. Let's all hope for that to happen sooner rather than later. So for now, from this particular podcast, I guess we're saying goodbye, but not forever.
No, not forever. Yeah, and we know this isn't just us. Like, we're following suit of many other podcasts out there. So, all right.
So, taking a break, put our energy behind hoping for a good and just outcome, and we'll be back as soon as we can be.
Okay.
And thank you all for your support.
Yes, thank you. We love you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You can subscribe to our new Patreon-only podcast, We Couldn't Help But Wonder, Still Wondering, right now. For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation, and Twitter at WCHBW Podcast. And don't forget to check out my new podcast with Vanya Arslanian, Mike and Vanya Can't Not. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love if you would share this podcast with someone, put up a link or tell a friend. Take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. Most importantly, stay safe, and let's all take care of each other.
She can't lose her virginity after lunch at Shack Shake. And they all kind of take a pause.
At where?
Shack Shake. Did you just talk about yourself in the third person? Is that what it is, or first person?
I don't know. A person's a person, no matter how small.
No, Mama's... Mama? Mama? Moma is honoring her. Little Dog Laughed, I believe was the name of it, in which she was...
Is that the Charlie Brown one?
No, it was a play by Douglas Carter.
Dog Sees God.
What?
Dog Sees God is the Charlie Brown one.
So similar. Ooh, my contact just came out of my eye.
Oh no, put that bag.
Let me see if I can fix this so I will have the gift of vision. I can see. It might be inside out. We'll deal with that later.
Oh, hold on. Mike is inserting contact. Contact. His favorite movie.
Here we go. Contact's been made. My favorite movie. Unless Oprah asks, and then it's The Color Purple.
I will say the material written for Maddie is much better than the material.